Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Don't you know it? It is time for Pollock and Thurston coming at you on Wednesday, July the 10th, the anniversary of Pro Wrestling Noah's first
Tokyo Dome card. That's the anniversary I think of. Jun Akiyama versus Kazu Kobashi.
That's right. The Tokyo Dome 20 years ago today.
Was that Destiny?
Destiny, yes.
Okay.
And the next one was what? Departure, I think? No. Yeah, anyway.
I think that was the very first Noah show in 2000.
Yes, yes. And then they did the Dome show July of 04, 05, kind of your peak Noah period.
So they're calling that Noah Good Dynasty is the one that's coming up in January.
Wrestle Dynasty, yes.
Yes, yes.
We have AEW Dynasty, and we have New Japan Wrestle Dynasty.
Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't create any confusion in the marketplace.
It's going to be very confusing for a lot of us coming up. But we are here. We have a guestless show, but lots to discuss. And Brandon, it was so great to see you this past weekend. You made the trip all the way up to Toronto, failing to stop by a local national institution of Tim Hortons.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to move past that. I've got coffee here, but I'm not really learning and doing the work yet. I've just got coffee from home today, but I could stop at a Tim Hortons. There's many. I'm on my way to work.
Have you been alerted from your Buffalo citizens of the availability of Tim Hortons in Buffalo?
No, I don't know. I don't know what the conversation has been like completely, but no, I've gotten some messages about other things, but I wonder if there's more Tim Hortons actually in the Buffalo area than there is in the Toronto area.
I can't imagine that, but I don't have a good scope of Buffalo.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah. It's a pretty popular chain. And also as irony would have it, from the press box, we were staring right at a Tim Horton banner.
At the hockey player Tim Horton.
Yes,
who also played for the Sabres, not only the Maple Leafs.
Yes, yes. He died in a car accident, and his legacy is probably more so attached to coffee and donuts than it is to hockey.
He started the chain?
He started it.
A businessman as well as a hockey player.
He was. He had his eye on the future beyond hockey. Well, we are going to talk a little bit about Money in the Bank, but as always, when Brandon comes up to Toronto, he's not doing it the overnight here. He gets right back into his car and heads back to Buffalo at ungodly hours of the morning, but you made it home safely. Very impressive.
Yes.
Not as crazy as the Forbidden Door return that you made when I think that presser went till about 3 a.m.
Yeah, this was a longer than usual WWE presser, though. There were many people who wanted more questions, so they extended it.
Yes, there was a 90-minute press conference that did not seem like it was designed to be 90 minutes, keeping everyone at that desk because Cena and CM Punk had other ideas. They wanted to engage, take more questions, and we got the 90-minute supersized edition of the WWE press conference.
Yes, a Super Cena supersized edition.
So that was the big news coming out of Money in the Bank. We'll talk about the press conference. I know everyone wants to hear about that. But the major news was John Cena's appearance on the show announcing this retirement tour, which as more and more information came out, this retirement tour grew and grew and grew. It went from him coming out and announcing his retirement, and everyone is stunned, and then confirming that next year will be the retirement. I'll have my last Royal Rumble. I'll have my last Elimination Chamber, and I'll have my last WrestleMania tune into the press conference. So then people are thinking, well, this is going to go until Vegas next year. And then at the press conference, we learn he's looking at 30 to 40 dates in 2025. The retirement tour will go all year long. So it is going to be a farewell at the end of 2025 for when John Cena will then be 48 years old by the time he retires at the end of next year.
Yeah, I was... I guess I was thinking about getting my hand up. I was going to ask him how many matches does he anticipate this tour being for. It's obviously going to be at least three, but he's talking about January to December. So I wonder if that means he's going to work house shows. I assume he's going to appear a lot on Netflix in the early days of the Netflix deal. And he talked about Netflix in his live promo in front of the fans.
I think he all but confirmed he's going to be attached to that launch on Netflix. I'm sure like that is going to be the full court press when they move to Netflix in January. And just having somebody like John Cena and his face attached to that, and just the idea of WWE having as many of their recognizable stars on those tiles that you would think Netflix is going to be very engaged in promoting this. Having John Cena attached, I think, is going to be just another added boost that this – I can't imagine the promotion that is going to go into this launch in January. But this is going to be a whole year-long campaign for WWE, climaxing with a retirement, and it's going to be probably the biggest like merchandise run we might ever see from this company in terms of all the last time in blank that it, like, this is to me going to just be a monster of a push for WWE all year long leading up to this final match. Like, every single stop is going to be the last time to see John Cena here. It's going to be like the Sting retirement. I thought they really nailed the ending, but you could look at all these opportunities, the final countdown for Sting. And I think they're just going to take that and blow it up around who you could say it's still their biggest star in John Cena, or at least, you know, 1B to a Cody Rhodes or a Roman Reigns, however you want to slot them.
It's really like some of the retirements I think we've seen in New Japan in the 90s. Like, wasn't the Inoki like a
Inoki
like
was years in the making, yes.
And didn't Choshu have a big build up to his retirement too, in terms of like, this is, mm-hmm. you know, obviously he had their final retirement shows in the Tokyo Dome. But it was really built up. Didn't Fujinami even retire? He's still going today. But anyway, do you think this is, he's really never going to wrestle another match after 2025? He certainly said it was.
He was so strong that he stated he won't even do guest referee spots after this retirement. So he's going into this with the idea that he had the same idea that Mick Foley did in 2000 of having a real retirement. And of course, Mick Foley's was famously 4 weeks, and then he came back for WrestleMania. And with Cena, I think he is in a unique position because a lot of these wrestlers, they are as loyal to these retirements as their options are. And John Cena is not going to be wanting for any gigs in professional wrestling. I think that he could make that decision. But I think with any wrestling retirement, you always take it with the grain of salt that there could always come that time that there's a reason to do another match, to do a guest referee spot. But he's being pretty hardline about this. And given how hard WWE pushed that Ric Flair retirement, that was something they never wanted to mess with, but that's why they allowed him to leave the company. And like, that was a retirement that they just did not want to violate. I kind of feel they're going to, I mean, it all comes down to like situational, and what would a John Cena, like this guy's going to be close to 49 by the time he retires and is going to have so many projects, many of which that are likely to prohibit even doing wrestling, that a lot of it's going to be out of his hands.
I just think it was interesting. He kind of made it sound like, although he's been talking about having his last matches for a while in other interviews before this, he kind of made it sound like this was an idea that was presented to him. Like, it was pitched to him and he accepted it. It was like, it was not necessarily an idea that he initiated in this way anyway.
Yeah, I took it that he had the idea for this, but they weren't necessarily receptive at the time he pitched this. And then they came back to the table and stated, this is the time to do this. And I would imagine like Cena had this in mind for a while, and it was just WWE having it on their schedule to do this. But yeah, I think you look at the 30 to 40 dates of, you know, what kind of balancing act is he doing? Is he wiping his schedule clean? Because you would think that he's going to have some outside projects throughout the year. and balancing that with not just the timing, but also like the physical nature of things when you're talking about someone at this age that's not working regularly, how an injury is always a possibility, but you're going into this with the hope like that really does throw a wrench into things if something happens here, like how carefully you map this out, and it could be a domino effect if you're throwing a curveball like that.
Yeah. Do we know of any projects, any movie projects that he has coming up that have like yet to be filmed? I'm looking at his IMDb. He's got something called Jackpot, which is completed, and he's got something called Heads of State in post-production. So I don't see anything here, at least here, that shows, you know, what's yet to be filmed.
Well, he has to do a follow-up at the Academy Awards after his big presentation this past year that got so much following attached to it. Yes. So there you go. Do you think we see him again this year, or do you think this will kick off in January, and that will be the Cena countdown?
I don't know. You could see him maybe once or twice, but yeah, I think this is going to be Netflix episode one, John Cena for sure.
I think he shows up on the very first Raw on Netflix, and we put a countdown clock that is just there and periodically shows up all year long. Countdown to the final match.
Could be.
That's it. Well, that was...
That was it. That's all that came out of the press conference, right?
Yeah, that was it. I mean, John Cena just came. He wanted to take some questions, opened up the floor to everyone, and I asked my question about Vince McMahon. Should we play this clip, Brandon, that you have located?
Sure. I'll take the video off screen, though, so you don't have to trip any copyright issues here.
Yes, let's avoid that if possible.
Hey, John, over here. This might be a difficult question for you to answer, but
let's lean into it. Let's give it a try.
Obviously, when people are reflecting on your career, it's very hard to separate your career and Vince McMahon. And I want to know, now that you have had a lot of time to kind of reconcile what has been alleged against Vince McMahon, can you tell me what he has meant to your career and also how you have kind of processed what has come out over the last 2 years?
Well, surely an uncomfortable question. Man, I really would much rather talk about what's ahead of us, and that's really important. I've been pretty honest with my opinion to answer that question, and if you didn't see it, I know you can dig it up somewhere. I think we're on the precipice of something pretty special, and as the business evolves and continues to evolve, damn, it's in pretty good hands with the TKO folks. So I am happy to be where I'm at. Again, I think if you want that information, you dig hard enough, you can find it. Thank you, though. Thank you. Appreciate the courage.
He appreciated your courage.
Yes, yes. Many people have conveyed that, in case I missed it at the end, back to me, the courage. Listen, I thought his answer, yeah, he did not want to talk about Vince McMahon. He was, you know, avoiding it, but I had no issue with, you know, how he opted to respond to it. And for those that have mentioned the fact that, you know, he did address this to Howard Stern back in February, where he did state, if you listen to that answer at the beginning, it's not hard to talk about. It's hard to listen to. So, I mean, at that time, he was certainly not avoiding the topic of Vince McMahon, however you wanted to interpret his answer. But more along the lines of what I wanted to ask him in that particular moment is that this entire year of 2025 is going to be centered on this legacy promotion of John Cena, who was the longest tenured main eventer that Vince McMahon ever promoted, from the time he became a main eventer in 2005. And for the next decade, he was essentially the number one promoted guy. And that was longer than anybody that Vince McMahon promoted. To be able to go through what will no doubt be a gigantic historical retrospective look at John Cena's career next year and all the highlights. And we're going to do this without the lens of Vince McMahon, who promoted this individual for all that time. Not to mention, at the end of this, even brought up the idea he will do a Hall of Fame speech at some point, that Vince McMahon is someone that we will not speak about on our broadcast. He does not exist anymore. And yet we are going to look at this historically of John Cena, who was absolutely a Vince McMahon promoted figure from start to near finish of his career. And I think that you're kidding yourself if John Cena, who will be all over media next year and promoting Netflix and such, and how you imagine Vince McMahon's name does not come up in any of this. So I think it was that was my thinking behind it. But I was encouraged, though, because 100% support of my question being asked. So I do appreciate that. I was hoping for some healthy pushback to it, but none was found.
Yes. We'll talk about all this now. So then later I asked Paul Levesque if WWE was still cooperating with the federal investigation into allegations surrounding Vince McMahon, which WWE had disclosed about a year ago in their SEC filings. And Nick Khan took a question about it on an earnings call, if I recall, as well. His answer was very short and to the point that he can't talk about legal stuff right now. So when it comes to, let's go through this exercise again. When it comes to asking the kinds of questions that we ask, we and a couple press conferences ago, Lucas Charpiot, get a lot of support, but a lot of negative pushback as well. And I guess I want to go
several through, threats.
Implied threats, I would say. But it's part of the territory.
Totally normal reactions to questions asked. Yeah.
I guess I want to go through some of the responses, the kinds of responses from weakest to strongest, from dumbest to smartest, and you know everything from how can you ask questions like this? This is a WWE press conference. Children are watching this press conference, perhaps, and this is making everyone uncomfortable.
Was that a response you did get?
That's one real response. He already addressed to the Cena question. Look, he already talked about this on Howard Stern, talked about it for a couple minutes. And you're just trying to create clickbait.
Oh yeah, I clearly did that. I think I created clickbait for everybody else but us, because I think everyone took this to be the most new. That's an annoying one, because it's like stating that, well, what you asked garnered the most attention of any answer John Cena provided. So did I ask the most newsworthy question, or is it like, what is the difference between that? That all these other sites covered my answer that that John Cena gave. Does that tell you that I asked a bad question, or that I asked the most pertinent question that came out of that 20 minutes with John Cena?
Yeah, I don't disagree. And then, so we've got
you. I also want to just add here, like, I'm not trying to be super defensive either, because when we do these things, like, I'm very open to constructive criticism, and people have every right to respond however they want to Brandon and I, within reason. I think people will know what, threats aside. I think Brandon and I are very open-minded, and I actually seek out, like, if people have like legitimate questions, or why did you do this? I'm very open to have those conversations. I don't even so much mind the, like, if you want to send me your clown emojis or your jokes, they usually fall flat, but I'm not even like opposed to that. Like, if that's how you want to respond, that's totally fine too. Like, I don't get too bent out of shape over all of this stuff. I would like to have productive conversations about this, and not always just with Brandon, but this is kind of our outlet to have these discussions that we can't have in the center of these press conferences, but there's always a thought process that goes into this. And I'm going on a long tangent here, but like the stuff about, you ruin the mood. Well, who's setting the mood in these press conferences? And as long as it's labeled a press conference to me, if you want to change it to the WWE Money in the Bank after party, that's fine. But do alert us what these are going to be, because as long as it's a press conference, I'm going to come in and I'm not going to degrade your question that is asked. And I would hope you don't do mine either. I think we all have a right to be able to ask the questions we want. And my last thing I would ask is,
and nobody's, by the way, I don't think anybody's, who is also in the room, to my knowledge, is criticizing any of our questions.
No, I'm not. I did not receive anything negative from anyone in that room, or even any media people myself. So I'm not trying to hint at that. Secondly, I want to state that the fact is, I was asked, boy, did you get heat from the WWE over your question? Not at all. They gave me a microphone to ask a question. I got to ask the question. More importantly, is like, I'm not a fixture at all of these press conferences. Brandon, you kind of are at this point. There is no surprise as to what kind of question you're going to be asking. And routinely, they allow you to ask that question. So, like, whatever you want to state about WWE is that both of us got into the press conference. For all the people that got upset that I didn't get into the WrestleMania press conference, I was in this one. So take that for what you will.
We were monitoring the meaning of our yellow wristbands, if it meant we got.
Yes, there were yellow and green wristbands, and it turned out yellow was I thought green meant go, and yellow was it wasn't red, but it was yellow, so I didn't know what it meant. But yellow gave us access to the press conference, yeah. And that was that. There was no one, at least to me, that had any issue, and more importantly, like with Brandon, like they. They know what you're going to ask. Like, it's not a surprise what angle you're going to be going at.
Yeah. As always, I got no pushback, no follow-up conversations from anyone at WWE about my question. I think it's the same for you.
There's a lot of hands that go up at these press conferences. Like, they could very well give Brandon access and not get a microphone to him. And you can't make the conclusion that they're trying to stop you from asking a question. There's a reasonable amount of hands here and only so much time. But almost, like, has there been a press conference that you have not gotten a question in? Like,
night two of WrestleMania.
Okay.
I was there.
But you did night one. You asked about Brock Lesnar, I think.
Yes, correct. Correct.
So,
yeah. And somebody from WPR looked at me, pointed at me, and I was given the microphone. So they were specifically, you know, picking me out or accepting me, you know, as the person asking the question. I did notice when you were handed the microphone, right before you were handed the microphone, you were asked by the member of production who is handing the microphone around, whether your question pertained to retirement.
Yes. I did say it was. I mean, I think Vince McMahon is attached to his retirement. So, there was that. Yes.
Yes. So to try to present what I think is the strongest argument that I've heard is that when you ask a question like the kinds of questions that we asked, you expect they're going to try to dodge in some way. They do dodge. Did you really learn anything? Somebody might say, no, you didn't really learn anything. Did you? And it's just,
I did.
We'll get there. So it's just, you didn't really learn anything. And it's just, ultimately, at the end, it's a virtue signal to show that, well, we're the good people. We're the tough reporters who ask tough questions.
Well, if the intent was to virtue signal, I think I did a very poor job, because I have to say, the feedback I got to this was, you know how many angry DMs I got? You know how many angry emails I got from people? Zero. Zero. That's not an exaggeration. That's literally zero. I got a few of support. Now, I'm not doubting that there's plenty of tweets out there, but I'm also not like seeking all that out. People can, by all means. Listen, if Brandon and I had this idea of where can we get the most bang for our buck in this wrestling media ecosystem, this is maybe the worst lane to choose that Brandon and I have chosen. Yes, there is a healthy appetite for people that want to engage in these stories, that want to digest, learn about television numbers, about the business side of pro wrestling, but it's a very narrow lane. And it is like, folks, do your own research. Like, I'm not on a channel that's got a million subscribers on YouTube. Okay. We are doing this, I think, for a whole lot more than just like patting ourselves on the back of stories that are increasingly difficult to cover, that come with a ton of pushback from people that, all I can say is like, I'm open to being as transparent as possible, but a lot of these reasons fall apart at the seams when given any kind of like analysis of how it plays out. Like, if I really wanted to just dive into the content creation space, I could do that. And maybe that would be, it would certainly give me a whole lot more opportunity to do all various type of content creation and open up more doors and I could work with different companies and all of this different stuff. And yeah, that probably would raise my profile. But it's not the kind of work I'm interested in doing. And I realize like this is a small lane, but I think it's the most important lane to be occupying, if for no other reason than this year, where this is the biggest story of the year, regardless of whether this case is on pause or not. There's still a ongoing federal investigation. And for Brandon's part, I'm kind of speaking for you here. This was your first opportunity to have FaceTime with Paul Levesque since that case was placed on pause. You did not travel to Saudi Arabia. You did not travel to Scotland, but you did travel to Canada. And you had one question. And for people that have an issue that not the time, not the place, please tell me what the time and what the place is. How many questions that you get to, you, Brandon, are on the higher side, and you probably get to ask Paul Levesque four questions a year. Four questions a year. This is not a baseball team where you are traveling with the team and night after night, you get to go to the post-game scrum around the locker room and you get FaceTime with the players and the coaches on a nightly basis. You get X amount of time all year long. I don't know if I will ever have another face-to-face press conference interaction with a John Cena. At the very earliest, it would probably be the Royal Rumble next January that John Cena is even going to be in front of a wrestling-based media for a setting like that. So I think people kind of get it twisted about, was that a fair question, when what you're really asking, was that a nice question? And I think I asked my question in a completely respectful fashion, and he's fair to answer it however he chooses to. That's his right. He does not have to answer any of my questions, but there are questions I do have to ask. There are questions that Brandon has to ask, and I think we would be doing a disservice to punt on those opportunities. That's a long-winded answer.
If there are bigger stories in the history of wrestling other than the number of allegations of sexual misconduct against Vince McMahon, it's not many of them. And I think, when we have only a handful of questions per year to ask to, in the case of Paul Levesque, one of the leading executives of the company, I think it's appropriate. So let's talk about his answer. His answer was very short and just said, I can't talk about legal things. Did we learn anything from, let's start with Cena's answer. Did you learn anything from Cena's answer?
I learned that that's going to probably be his stock answer when he is asked about Vince McMahon, inevitably, maybe not in a wrestling press conference setting, but in other, like, I don't even know how much like Vince McMahon will be brought up to John Cena. But like, again, I went back to listen to this Howard Stern answer, and he begins it by stating, like, Howard Stern couches it in like a very, no, Howard Stern is a great interviewer. And he starts it off by stating, I know this is really hard to talk about. And Cena's response is, it's not hard to talk about. It's hard to listen to. And I took that to be that not a whole lot of people have maybe the capacity to truly understand. I sympathize that John Cena is in a difficult position here. He is not accused of anything. This is someone who was a mentor to him for two decades that is accused of some horrendous stuff. But in that same answer, John Cena's answer was that I love the guy, but I also believe in accountability. And what I took from his answer this past weekend is that I don't know how much. I think, number one, it is difficult for him to talk about, despite what he said in February. And number two, I don't think he's going to necessarily be using his public voice to navigate the nuances that I'm sure privately he has had a lot of struggles navigating. And let's not forget, in April, when NBC News put out the story, who were the people that NBC reported that Vince McMahon is still in contact with? He stated Dwayne Johnson and he stated John Cena. And that happened after the Howard Stern
and interview. Donald Trump was part of that, which spokesperson kind of went back on. Yeah.
Now on Paul Levesque, again, very short answer, but I would tell you what I learned is that Paul Levesque has been prepped to be ready for questions like that. And it was there was none of the fallout that we saw at the Royal Rumble, where he was very criticized for his handling of that in the wake of the Janelle Grant suit filed several days prior. And this time around, he had a very quick answer that you could not pick apart other than he's not talking about it and can't talk about any legal issues.
Yeah, I think if he had said something to that effect. I know he was asked three different questions three different times at the Royal Rumble press conference, but if he had leaned more on an answer like that, I think it would have been a better response for him. I think when I ask executives questions like the one that I asked Paul Levesque on Saturday, I think even if they don't give you a very substantive answer, there are at least two things that we learn. We learn something about this person's character, which is pertinent because they're a leader of a major wrestling company and they oversee a lot of talent and staff. And I think even if they don't answer the question, not only do you learn something about how they're handling this question, about what kind of leader they are because of how they respond to it, I think we are saying something about, like, this is an important topic, especially in a room where we're often the only one or two questions that are about a topic like this. We're saying, yeah, this is important enough to use my one question, and I've got maybe only four or six of these per year. I'm going to use this one question to bring this topic up because it is important. And if that leads to more conversations about this, and if that leads to more appropriate scrutiny around things, including sexual misconduct, or whether it's, you know, asking Tony Khan about whether or not he actually did or did not pay for CM Punk's surgery and rehab, which Punk said he did not, issues of how talent are treated and are they being taken care of, in a way that is fitting of a major wrestling company. So I think we learn things like that, even if you get, as evasive an answer as possible.
Yeah. And again, I have a lot of leeway that I have towards fans that are watching this and they are watching their WWE content. And this is veering outside of their quote unquote entertainment. And that's part of how these things are presented. And I think all of us have like the look of like what these press conferences are. They're trying to do a lot of things. And I can understand that from the fan side of things, but I think you also have to understand that this is a press conference. This is still a press conference. And as long as I am given access to these press conferences, I'm going in there as a reporter. And I think a lot of people understand that. Some don't. And I will try my best to convey our thought process. But neither of us are above criticism at the same time. I am fine with constructive criticism that people have towards us. I would just state that since Saturday, I have not encountered any criticism that I take as having any misstep of how I handled things on Saturday or thinking of how I would have done things differently. I frankly would not have done anything differently. I don't know about you, Brandon.
No, I think people are free to criticize what we do just as we, you know, report on and criticize people in the business. We have a lot of power, and we, you know, it's a healthy thing for there to be.
You can also learn a lot.
Like there are criticism around how wrestling or how anything is covered.
Of course. We did have a super chat there. If we want to go here to Eduardo, I don't know if it was a question.
He's just giving us virtue signaling that we crave.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Eduardo. We appreciate the super chat. If anyone wants to throw in any questions or anything, we will do our best to get to them. Was there anything else out of the press conference that you wanted to touch upon? We don't want to be too vain and just focus on ourselves, but I think some people did want to hear in this format where we could go into a bit more of kind of the thought process.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
I think that was everything. Anything you wanted to get?
I mean, we, what else did we, it did seem that CM Punk had, given a slight endorsement of the new, caramel flavored, donuts that they have.
Was that Tim Hortons as well? You said it was Tim Hortons. You reported it. Is that accurate?
It was definitely Tim Hortons.
I didn't see a Tim Hortons logo myself.
It appeared to be Tim Hortons.
Okay, you would know better. Yeah.
Yeah. They are now, they're doing some like caramel crossover promotion, and this, it looks like a just horrendous donut to put into your body, but I'm sure Punk was, he didn't seem to devour this donut either, but I guess that is the thing now. He never comes to any of these press conferences unarmed.
Without food. Yeah. We have a breaking story. We have a breaking story since we've been on the air here. I don't know if you've seen this. According to Andrew Marchand from The Athletic, NBA finalizes TV deals with ESPN, NBC, Amazon, but TNT could still match. Sources.
Yeah. So my understanding of this is that once these like deals are like signed, TNT only has like a couple of days to formally try and respond to match. And yeah, from all indications, what does this here? While the NBA and its partner agreed to all the language, incumbent TNT Sports continues to threaten to match. The CEO of TNT Sports parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery's David Zaslav, known as Mr. Zaslav to some, has publicly stated that he may attempt to use language in the current contract to remain involved with the NBA. If Zaslav goes through with that, he is expected to target Amazon's package. Threatening and targeting to go into business with someone doesn't always turn out to be the best course of action.
Yeah. I think they're all at Sun Valley this time of the year, which is like, I take it to be like where all the media moguls get together and hang out together at this, I don't know, fantastic resort or vacation spot or something. So maybe this is maybe more executives being together is expediting the finalization of this of the long and running storyline of NBA TV rights, which is relevant to wrestling. Why? Because if an NBA TV deal gets done, it might make it more likely that an AEW TV deal gets done more quickly, because we're assuming that that's a factor, because the NBA is such a big deal. It is a much higher priority than an AEW deal would be. And if an NBA deal is finally done, then that may settle the dust for an AEW deal to get done as well.
Yeah. I mean, if the timing worked out, and it might be difficult, next week is Dynamite's 250th episode that Tony Khan has been mentioning. It would be a great timing to be able to have this deal, but I mean, timing is always hard to predict on these deals finishing up. And has David Zaslav accepted life after the NBA? It sounds like he's clinging.
Yes, yeah. I guess the legal issue there is that I assume that WBD has matching rights pretty explicitly to match what's going to be the NBC deal. But it's less clear. I think it's more contentious about whether they actually would have rights to match this Amazon deal, because it's a streaming deal rather than traditional TV.
Let's go through a few notes that came out of Money in the Bank weekend. So this got the press release treatment. They announced over 45,000 people attending the four events in Toronto, which includes the Sami Zayn and Friends Do Toronto special at the Danforth Music Hall on Thursday, which is a venue that can hold up to 1,500. I don't know how many people attended this, but I heard it was a good turnout for this Sami Zayn special. And then what was interesting about this is, if you look at the final numbers WrestleTix had, it had SmackDown, Money in the Bank, and Heatwave at just over 45,000. So this seemed to be a pretty on-track number, if anything, like a little under, because you could certainly have glossed this up a little bit. But this seemed to be a pretty true-to-accurate number.
Yeah, and WrestleTix doesn't include suites, right? Because suites just don't appear on the ticket map. That's just not how most, if any, venue works. So... yeah, I mean, I added them all up on Saturday morning, even with just the number that was out there for NXT at that point, before NXT had actually taken place, and already that was over 45,000 estimated tickets distributed. So we've got third-party data from WrestleTix that does support their claim about attendance.
They also stated, we were back to percentage increases year over year on Peacock, with viewership for Money in the Bank up 46% over last year's show, making it the most watched Money in the Bank ever. Peacock, at last reporting for the first quarter of the year, was up to 34 million subscribers, which would be up an additional 6 million subs from Q3 last year, which is when Money in the Bank took place in London, England. So it's worth noting that increase Peacock has had.
Yeah. And we'll see, get an update, I believe, in about a month or so on Peacock subscribers, which, you know, Peacock has continued to do well as far as
it's a streaming. We're going into the Olympics as well. Like they should be in line for a big boost in the coming weeks, if not already. And the largest arena gate ever in Canada for a WWE event. So presumably this would exclude the two WrestleMania events from 1990 and 2002. I can't remember if I asked you, you went to the WrestleMania in 2002?
Oh, no, in Toronto? No, I did not.
Oh, you did not. Okay. Well, yeah, that one probably still holds the mark for WWE in Canada. Also coming out of the weekend, if you noticed, and you probably did, that Money in the Bank had a 7 p.m. Eastern start time, as did Heatwave, and that is the advertised start time for SummerSlam, and it was indicated to us by a WWE official that this will be the move going forward in terms of start times for the North American shows that will still adjust when they do the overseas events, but an hour earlier, and we'll see if this makes any discernible difference being up an hour earlier.
Yes, and it's always good when you know, as I get older here, I'm about to turn 39, and that's I think going to be my final birthday. No more birthdays after that. And as I get older, it's nice to have an event that is done by like what, 10 o'clock or so.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be complaining about doing our post shows at 10 instead of 11. So that's a nice change. Also, they announced we're going to get. PW Insider reported that NXT's next PLE will be No Mercy on Sunday, September the 1st in Denver, Colorado, which is the day after Bash in Berlin. So two WWE shows in as many nights. And then Bad Blood is coming back. It's properly spelled, unlike the original incarnation. And we have got October the 5th at the State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, earmarked for that particular show in October.
Yes. At what arena?
The State Farm Arena.
Who's in charge of the State Farm Arena?
That would be the illustrious Steve Coonan. And who's Steve Coonan?
Steve Coonan is the CEO of the State Farm Arena and the Atlanta Hawks. And he is a current member of TKO's board of directors, a former member. I'm searching for the about section. But he is a current member of TKO board of directors. And he was a member of WWE's board of directors before that.
All right. So,
and his son is a CAA agent who I believe worked with Nick Khan too. So I think that's where the connections are coming from there.
Well, we also had a connection from Nick Khan's past with the latest hiring to the WWE broadcast team. Joe Tessitore is going to be joining WWE with a press release issued on Tuesday. Was that the day that they released this? Yes, yesterday. This was first broken by the New York Post about an hour before WWE confirmed this. That Joe Tessitore will be joining this summer, not giving a firm start date, but he will be paired with Wade Barrett and Corey Graves, and then Michael Cole and Pat McAfee that they made mention will remain teamed up. I guess that was very important to make sure this is not going to interrupt the Michael Cole, Pat McAfee team on Raw.
Simply adding a third man to... It's probably going to be SmackDown.
Yeah, you would think so. They didn't, for whatever reason, make that clear, but it would make the most sense. And of course,
flip the teams or something.
This comes in advance of SmackDown. We'll be moving to USA Network in, I think it's September 13th is the move date for the Friday show. And yeah, Joe Tessitore will continue his duties at ESPN and ABC. And the connection to Nick Khan that the New York Post mentioned was that Nick Khan's first media client was Joe Tessitore years back.
Yes. PW Torch has also reported that bringing in Joe Tessitore is something that Lee Fitting was pushing for.
Right. And Lee Fitting coming from ESPN would have probably had a lot of connection and work with Joe Tessitore. But naturally, this always brings up the discussion of, like, Joe Tessitore is not a stranger to professional wrestling. What I've seen of him have been usually around WrestleMania time. He does various interviews with talent. I think he's a very good interviewer with the talent. I think he asks a lot of more interesting questions than most. the question is always like coming over to, you know, this guy has never called professional wrestling before. And I think it would be natural to look at other examples of people that have come over that have never called professional wrestling before. And you don't always get that learning curve where someone is immediately thrown into the fire on national television, not to mention a three-man booth, which is tricky at the best of times. But now you're taking Corey Graves, who I thought acclimated to that role pretty well, will presumably be back into the analyst role and sharing those duties with Wade Barrett.
Yes, well, he's following in the footsteps of Mike Adamly, Jimmy Smith, and Adnan Virk, who didn't last long in WWE.
No, those are the men he is following. But we will see this summer coming to a screen near you, Joe Tessitore in WWE.
Do you think that there's? I would argue that there's more value here than just in signing a talent and putting that talent to work. I think there's a lot of marketing value for WWE in particular, which is sort of on the outskirts and in the out group of when it comes to sports. And you've got, you know, there are people in sports media who are glad to talk about WWE. We've seen the tweets in response to this news from the likes of Austin Karp with SBG and Richard Deitch with the Athletic, and you know, they're in big time approval of this. And I think it just drives WWE into more of a sports media conversation, which seems like something that's really important to them. And I would say, I was telling somebody the other day, whatever they're paying Pat McAfee, it's not enough, because it makes them part of this sports business world. And I imagine that helps things like, you know, legitimizing WWE as a major sports property and attracting sponsors.
He might be the most relevant voice in sports to an audience that WWE craves to reach, that all of sports craves. I mean, Pat McAfee to me is the equivalent of you betting on a future, and in 5 years, your investment has just grown 50x. Like, that is what, like, Pat McAfee, they got into the Pat McAfee business like back in, I'm trying to remember the first year that he started doing those
back
NXT
when he wore his
shows.
His shorts and Vince McMahon did not like it or something, right? Remember that? That was like WrestleMania 31, 2015 or something.
Yeah, that was the that was the MetLife Stadium show. So that would have been
2019.
Like, we're going back years that he has been associated with this company, and now he has become like, he's a lightning rod, but in all the ways that I think they just, like, anything Pat McAfee does is getting you attention. And the fact that this guy is doing his show, and he'll do his show on Monday afternoon and then cross the border to Canada to come to Ottawa to do this show and then go back to do his show on Tuesday. It's remarkable the commitment and buy-in that he has. Like, this is something that clearly he wants to be doing, because he definitely does not need to be adding on top of his schedule as it is to do wrestling once a week.
Yes. And sports media loves it. We've got gushing tweets. Dude is a Swiss Army knife. Speaking of Joe Tessitore, which is what Austin Karp tweeted.
This is a small one, but it is an interesting trend that we're continuing to see. So Variety today reported that Drew McIntyre is the latest talent to join the Paradigm Talent Agency, joining CM Punk, Damian Priest, and Tiffany Stratton joining this Paradigm Talent Agency. And it's just an interesting shift we're seeing, where famously Vince McMahon hated dealing with any kind of agents or representation. And it seems quite the opposite in this era, where a lot of their marquee talent that they see having options elsewhere, like, certainly there's a clear pathway towards
WWE
representation.
WWE is being run by a talent agent.
Well, it helps that you have new eyes.
Lots of them from his former employer too.
So anyway, I guess this is more of these to come. We'll see. Who's going to nab Javon Evans? He would be my future that I would be getting a hold of.
Yeah. I mean, I'm aware of many wrestlers who are represented by talent agents. And I think it's probably something that wrestlers only past a certain level are really working with. But I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about what is the interplay between talent agents and the notion of there ever being a union or association of some sort for collective bargaining. But yeah, it's I guess encouraging, but it does benefit the top level performers more so than the lower level performers.
The Oklahoma State Athletic Commission is holding a meeting today, and on the agenda, public comment period, slated, regarding current commission rules prohibiting male versus female fights, matches, and exhibitions, etc. Also on the agenda, possible discussion and action regarding the issue of slap fighting in the state of Oklahoma.
Yes.
This could be a seismic day for the state of Oklahoma that could both introduce intergender wrestling and slap fighting.
I was not expecting slap fighting to be on the agenda, but I did report in April, I believe it was, on, as we know, when AEW ran actually two shows in Oklahoma, but after they ran the first one in Oklahoma City, they had Nyla Rose on the show. Nyla Rose is a transgender woman, and they received some complaints. The commission received complaints because Oklahoma does have this rule against intergender matches, which they define as matches between two people who have different XX and XY chromosomes. So this is a story that came up at the time after they had their meeting and they discussed this. I reported on it and reported at the time that they were going to have this meeting today, which they did. And I'm hearing from someone who was at the meeting that they have to vote on it in October, but it does sound like they moved to lift this rule. So I've got to follow up. I'm going to call the commission probably a little while after we get off the air here, but it does sound like they are moving in the direction of reversing this rule that would prevent transgender people from wrestling people. It would prevent intergender matches from taking place as well.
Yeah, it's worth noting AEW does not have any upcoming dates scheduled for the state. WWE is going there for a SmackDown on September 27th in the near future. So we'll follow that story and see if I'm sure it's just a groundswell of demand for slap fighting within the state of Oklahoma.
It's the most popular sport on earth, according to Dana White, right?
By significant margins. Like anything else pales in comparison.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Well, AEW Collision, their numbers paled in comparison to the prior week when they aired up against Money in the Bank, and this became a big story over the weekend because lurking from behind, the Fast Nationals strike again, Brandon. And this is a semi-common occurrence, and we had a whole discussion about ratings and what they mean, why do these Fast Nationals come out some weeks, not other weeks, but then the final numbers came out, not painting the greatest picture for Collision. I don't think most were expecting Collision. This was their first head-to-head programming of Collision against a premium live event since WrestleMania, because the others have been afternoon shows. But Collision ended up finishing with 306,000 viewers, which was down 28% from the prior Saturday, and a 0.08 in the demo, which was down 32%, and a 0.05 in 18 to 34.
Yeah, shall we talk about the Fast Nationals? I don't know if we've ever talked about Fast Nationals on this program in particular.
It's a topic I've steadfastly tried to avoid. we should cover it because it's a recurring story and decimal numbers. We're also going to get into decimal placement.
It has reached a critical mass. This has been going on since the debut of Rampage, really. Fast Nationals. I want to try to explain this in a concise way as possible so it would be digestible here. Fast Nationals are kind of like the Fast affiliates that we get for broadcast programs, including SmackDown, except for Fast Nationals. In the case of a cable program like Collision or Rampage, you have to specially order. You, if you're a Nielsen customer, which TV networks are Nielsen customers, WWE is a Nielsen customer, AEW, to my knowledge, is not a Nielsen customer, but they get their data from WBD. You have to specially order a cable Fast National. You have to spend thousands of dollars per episode before that data will even be compiled and delivered to you.
This should be an incentive on your Patreon, okay? Once you reach a certain level, you'll subscribe to Nielsen Fast Nationals.
that has been considered. yeah, but anyway.
As I said, folks, it's a small lane, but it's an important lane.
Right. So you have to spend thousands of dollars per episode, not just like for a year, per episode, for every episode that you want data for. So if somebody's spending, if somebody's getting Fast Nationals for these AEW shows every week, they're spending thousands of dollars every week. Okay. And it can only be, so who has access to this data is a very small group of people who are willing to spend thousands of dollars per episode to get that data. So who, so use your imagination to think about who that might be. Could be WBD. I've asked people in AEW, you know, are you getting the Fast National data? They're not. So maybe WBD is getting it, but they're not sharing it with AEW, at least a lot of the time. So that leaves some other possible interested parties who might be interested in this data. So anyway, they get reported now and then. They often don't get reported when the week-to-week comparisons are not or are favorable. They only seem to come out when the week-to-week comparisons are unfavorable for AEW. We had this week, it was Bleacher Report's Eric Beeston who was reporting the Fast Nationals for both Rampage and Collision. They were down. He reported that the most memorably, what's getting some controversy here is that most memorably, the 18 to 34 rating is 0.0. Of course, that's rounding only to one decimal place instead of two decimal places, which is how we usually report things like P1849 ratings. I talked to Eric earlier today, and I think he was misled about what was happening here from whomever he got this data from. And I'm sure that he meant no ill will. He wasn't trying to paint AEW in a negative light here. But you know, this is a recurring occurrence where we're getting the Fast National data out there. And it's not being presented in a fair way. And it's, I think part of what's happening is, you know, you've got 2 days until the final ratings do come out. The Fast Nationals are almost always lower than what the final ratings are. So it's a couple days to let go by to get a negative narrative out there. If someone for some reason wanted a negative narrative out there about AEW ratings, so that it allows that to happen. And it's being communicated in misleading ways too here, apparently, such as 0.0 rating, which if you round to one decimal place, is true.
It was a 0.05.
If you average the quarter hours, it's a 0.044 something. So okay. It's as I was discussing this with Bix yesterday. If you, I think this is this particular data point is an entryway into a philosophy of math course as far as how should this really be rounded. Excel rounded it to 0.04. In any case, you know, it was not the case that there were no 18 to 34 year olds watching Rampage or Collision. But
this information was not being disseminated with a faithfulness to Excel or to necessarily the most accurate ways of which way it was disseminated from the beginning point, I think is a fair assumption to make.
I think it was communicated in a way to try to paint AEW's ratings in a negative light. Which they always, that's how they're always couched, virtually always.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that like last week we were doing this show on Wednesday. It was July the 3rd, the night before the 4th of July holiday, and I think both of us were expecting Dynamite to probably be impacted from that. And the fact was, like, not an enormous gain, but I thought their number last week doing a 0.23 was
all right,
way above what I had expected. They were coming off that terrible number the week before, and doing that on the eve of the holiday, I thought that was a very good number for Dynamite. Collision was a bad number. I'm not painting this as a great number. We know why it was down, but it was, I think that there is it gets very easy, and Brandon can, you know, is very good at deciphering this, of how numbers can be painted to tell very different stories, and you have to be presenting them in a fair, balanced way, and in good faith too, because you can see how games are played with numbers. And sometimes you have people that are still learning, like, a lot of this kind of understanding of these numbers. And Brandon is a really great resource for people to go to fully understand this.
And I'll say here, if there's anybody in wrestling media listening, what I told Eric earlier today is I'm glad to explain. And I've done this for other people in the last couple of years where Fast Nationals have come out and people have come to me to say, what's going on here, to have me help them understand this information. I'm glad to do that. More than happy to do that. Strange that I've never gotten these numbers fed to me for whatever reason.
I have not. You have not.
Yeah.
but they do make their way out there. We did not have too much other to talk about with regards to numbers. SmackDown was pretty much flat this week for Friday's show in Toronto with 2,256,000 viewers, which was like identical to the week prior, and then doing a point six six, which was also on the nose. Always an interesting number, Brandon, when you have to double check to make sure it was accurate. But yeah, like pretty much no movement when it came to those two numbers. They had a small increase in 18 to 34 from the week before.
Yes, exactly the same as last week, which was itself, I believe, a good rating relative to some prior weeks.
And Raw is we have not got a number for Raw yet, correct?
No data that I've seen yet for Raw, but maybe this evening. We'll see.
Yeah, it was the show in Ottawa, and it was a pretty light night in Canada. So they were actually number one among sports programming on Monday. But that was you did have soccer going on, but there was no Toronto Blue Jays game. So not that there was nothing going on sports wise, but it was a lighter night, and Raw was first for the night with 269,700 viewers and just over 105,000 in the 25 to 54 demo. That actually, Brandon knows, when you cross the border, there's a giant hologram 25 to 54, the main demo that we recognize here in Canada.
25 to 54 is also a demo that I think ads are bought against, and it is something that WBD has maybe told AEW to focus on even more than 18 to 49. I don't know, but it's, and I think that's something that maybe NBCU focused on more so than 18 to 49. It's just another way to slice the demo, I guess. And maybe the notion is that if you're 25 to 54 as opposed to 18 to 49, you're out of college and maybe you're making more money now.
Okay, we're going to wind things down. I'm going to play a clip in a few minutes of an interview I have coming up. But before we get to that, Brandon, you did a big comparison of WWE and AEW throughout the first 6 months of 2024. And we don't have to get into all the weeds of the numbers, but your overall look at things. And this, you looked at both television viewership in various categories, as well as attendance, that I think is like a really good number to monitor for both companies. But what were some of your more interesting takeaways from the performance of both leading companies throughout the first 6 months?
High level takeaways: AEW is down, and even when you consider cord cutting, AEW is mostly down. We'll get to that, but AEW is mostly down and WWE is mostly up. Or even if we're just looking at total viewership, SmackDown and Raw are slightly down. NXT has the best trends in all of wrestling television. NXT continues to grow. It's doing a 0.19 in the demo versus a 0.15 last year. Again, this is January to June only compared to the January, June of the prior year. And we have, as you'd expect, Collision, of course, is strongly down, but you're only comparing Collision here to 2 weeks in the prior year. But Dynamite is down. Rampage is down. Dynamite is down 761 to 881. And Rampage is down as well, but Rampage is not down as severely in terms of attendance. Attendance averages for AEW are all down. Dynamite is down to 3,900 average tickets distributed compared to 5,400 in the prior year. The Collision comparison again is complicated because of there's only three events in the prior year. But Raw is up. SmackDown is up. House shows basically flat, and pay-per-views are basically flat. It's reflective of what I think is probably intuitive for a lot of people, that AEW has become less popular with fans since the last year, and WWE has become more popular with fans since the last year. And that's bared out in television ratings. It's bared out in attendance. Briefly, do you want to just take a quick look at these coverage ratings that I got? For AEW, as
do you want to explain what coverage ratings are?
As Tony Khan brings up often, he attributes a lot of the, if not entirely, the decline in TV ratings of AEW to cord cutting, which is true. It's absolutely true that there's a lot of cord cutting happening and that fewer and fewer and fewer homes have access to TNT or TBS. So we have a coverage rating. Which is what? It is a percentage of the people who could have watched the show who actually have access to the network who actually watched the show. And what we have on the screen here is a year-over-year comparison comparing the first 6 months of this year to the first 6 months of last year. And in terms of total viewership, everybody over the age of two, it's down 7%. Dynamite is down 7%. Oh, if we look at actual viewers, it's down 14%. But adjusting for people who just have access to TBS, it's still down 7% in terms of total viewership. In 18 to 49, the decline is less severe. It's only down 3%. And that is including the tragic TV rating on June 19th. In terms of total viewers, that number is negative 13%. But again, just adjusting for people who have access to the network, it's down 3%. Rampage is also down, considering total viewership of people who have access to the network. It is down in, it is actually up in the demo though, by this measure. It's up 6%. So Rampage is, has really sort of leveled off here. And if anything, compared to last year in the demo, people have access to the network, it's actually up. Yeah, this is, you know, I was getting some data from people from AEW they were responding to an article that PW Torch had put out. And PW Torch was using two data points from this year compared to the same 2 weeks of the prior year. Those data points were accurate, but they were showing a slightly more negative comparison. And I said, all right, I'm going to get data from somebody who's not affiliated with AEW and look at the entire period. And that's what we have done here. And that's what the data was that we just looked at.
Yeah. And if you go on over to patreon.com/WrestleNomics, there's a really thorough breakdown of all of this and all the kind of relevant categories of the numbers that you see each week, also taking into account like the coverage rating as well. And you can have those comparison points.
Data than you want.
That's how
tons of demos. 25 to 54 is in here. All of these charts. Look at for Collision 2, the comparisons for Collision are really bad, of course, because it's only comparing that short period of last year versus all the episodes of this year. But every single demo for all three shows that I've got, it's all there.
If more than the viewers that are seeing this right now, like if that is not clickbait, then
look,
I don't know
look at
what
this.
Is. I mean, this folks, is this not like just, you know, lowest common denominator stuff to just like get those clicks.
You got median age in here. That image isn't loading, but it's all on Patreon. It does work on Patreon, I promise.
One thing just on the live event side of WWE, you may, like average attendance for house shows, like it's down like 1% you had, but the number of house shows for the first half of 2023, they ran 46 house shows. This year during that same 6 month period, down to 35. Do you think that this is a trend that is likely to continue, that there seems to be overall like a higher demand for WWE, but yet they are keeping it this this very like exclusive product and they're running less house shows than ever?
I'm sure it's a profitability decision, and that's very much consistent with comments that TKO's COO Mark Shapiro has made about running fewer house shows or running shows that are more profitable and cutting down the CND markets. But I think it's kind of a watershed moment in terms of the live event business and the history of it. We've got now in this first 6 months of the year, you know, some 51 Raw and SmackDown tapings and only 35 house shows. We've got more TV tapings than house shows, I think for the first time ever, other than the pandemic period, of course, when there were no house shows.
Yes. So it's just an interesting, like, it's not a new trend, but one just to see at this point that you, like, I'm certain it comes down to costs associated with them, but they are making, like, as these prices go up, like making this a very like lucrative ticket to be able, when WWE comes to your town, that it's going to be a rarity for a lot of places. But anyway, a great breakdown of the first 6 months of the year. We'll circle back in early 2025. We'll look at the final 6 months of the year. All right. At this point, I'm just going to play a quick clip. So Lenita Erickson, who is Lenita Erickson? For people that read the Nitro book by Guy Evans, there was a whole chapter dedicated to Lenita Erickson, who has one of the most baffling stories you could imagine of someone that entered WCW. She was pitching a concept for a totally different sports-related talk show to Brad Siegel. And somehow the idea of wrestling came up and she got hired and assigned to WCW and reported to the power plant. And as she is sent to the power plant, sort of just to become an on-screen character, she meets with J.J. Dillon, who is stationed at the power plant and is just kind of off to his own, working as an executive for the company. And J.J. Dillon interprets Lenita Erickson as, you've come to help me out. And Lenita kind of just went with it and suddenly becomes part of this group with Jerry Jarrett and J.J. Dillon. And within days, they're opening up the books for her. She's seeing all the financing and they are pitching. She has got this connection to Brad Siegel that the others don't. And they're able to pitch to the company and they become one of the leading candidates to potentially buy this company. And it's just a remarkable story about someone who just ends up being this player in the final months of WCW that just comes out of nowhere, kind of indicative of the company that you have all these different islands operating and multiple suitors that were going after WCW, which I guess was one of the complaints in the Vice series, was they really only focus on the Fusion offer before Vince McMahon and the WWE swoop in. So this whole interview is going to be coming out on Thursday on Post Wrestling, but here is just a quick little preview of that chat with Lenita Erickson. If you can sort of give us sort of an overview of what the pitch was on behalf of yourself, Jerry Jarrett, and J.J. Dillon, like what was the offer and what do you feel ultimately was the reason that they didn't move forward with that?
I think, thank you for that question, because I know what the offer was, which was $80
million. 80.
Yep. And he has done interviews since then. Now, keep in mind, and I want to do this respectfully as possible, even though right now we are in a business battle. So I don't really care what I say. He's done some squeaky things in business over the years, but
sorry, and who is he you're referring to?
Brad Siegel.
Okay, just to be clear.
Yes. And so the reason that he entertained our offer was, I believe, because as a legitimate president of, he had to consider options, and because of JJ's and Jerry's background, and also, he did have a lot of respect for me, and my ideas, my business sense, all that kind of stuff. So I think all along, it's my belief. Now I'm probably in part speaking for him, but I know him pretty well. But, in my belief, he never wanted it and he wanted it gone. And I think had he really honored our deal, the only thing we wanted were the time slots. We didn't care about the URLs or anything like that. That's all. Yes. I mean, that's all very important, but the time slots were what were golden.
Yes.
And he did not want to carry wrestling. So I think that what he did with Eric, because Eric had such a history in wrestling, that I think Brad was riding the pine with Eric to try to get Eric's deal secured so then he could wipe his hands clean. That's going to be my call on it. Again, I can't speak exactly for him, but if I were, as a business person, if I were to take a read of a room, that would be it.
All right. And that was Lenita Erickson chatting with us about the fall of WCW. So that interview, we're going to be releasing it on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel Thursday at noon Eastern, a lot into those final months, her dealings with Brad Siegel, who she is like still doing like business dealings with up to the present, knows Brad Siegel exceptionally well. And just her whole history with WCW is a pretty interesting discussion, and sharing her own thoughts on the Who Killed WCW series and revealing she was in fact interviewed for the series, but was not featured in the series. So all of that is coming up on Thursday as WCW continues to be up there in terms of this WCW and its demise. It will never go away.
Did she ever have an on-air role in wrestling or in WCW?
Yes, she did. To my knowledge, one backstage segment, which was not a very well-remembered segment, where she interviews Bob Sapp on an episode of Thunder that you can locate online. And it was a very strange segment. Like the one time Bob Sapp appears on WCW and then becomes this gigantic star in Japan after WCW. But that was her lone on camera role, but that was initially what she was brought in to do. She was going to be doing strictly an on camera role, and then ends up in this faction with J.J. Dillon and Jerry Jarrett and pitching to buy the company. I mean, this is the final days of WCW.
I think I've heard the audio of this on an episode of Between the Sheets. Before we go, we do have a super chat from Hansi. He says, great sharing a lift with you, Thurston. Thank you again, Hansi. I shared a lift with him, and he saved us a walk from wide open to Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah, Brandon, I felt bad for you. You got caught in traffic coming from Buffalo, and then as soon as you parked your car, the skies erupted on you. It was a Kazuchika Okada coming from the skies as the rain just poured down, but you
traffic was terrible leaving too. I thought it was going to be a clean ride going home. It was not good. It was a crawl to get back to the Gardiner Expressway.
Traffic is horrendous in Toronto, and I guess at all hours, it's horrible. I hate driving in this city. I just hate it. But yes, Brandon was he came earlier in the day because he was part of the Wrestling Media Summit, as we have dubbed it. And we're releasing that on Sunday with myself, Wei Ting, Brandon Thurston, Benno from the Grapple Spotlight podcast, and Stephanie Chase. So the five of us, if you enjoyed the first half of this show, you'll probably enjoy our Wrestling Media Summit, which was taped hours before Money in the Bank. So keep that in mind. But that will be released on Sunday evening at postwrestling.com and maybe on the WrestleNomics feed as well.
We'll put it out there as well.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that's going to bring an end to the show. We can already tee up that next week on the show, we're going to be joined by the voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Walker Stewart, is going to be joining us just before he heads over to Japan to call the G1 Climax. So he's going to stop by. Also, we're still nailing down a week to have him on, but we had promised to have Matt Camp on. He will be coming on the show. So I know a lot of people were wanting to hear him last week. He was not able to make it last week, but he has shared with us he would like to come on the show. So we will get Matt Camp on one of these weeks as well. But tonight, Wei and I will be live 10:05 Eastern on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel, right after Dynamite from Calgary, Alberta. The finals of the Owen Hart Cup tournament will be concluding. And then, of course, Sunday, it's Behind the Wall. It is patreon.com/WrestleNomics, as Brandon will be diving into many, many stories. Off the air, he was telling me what's in store for Sunday. I'm not gonna disclose, but it is quite the show that's coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be a surprise. And it'll be whatever's in the news between now and then. Whatever gets in the slides, as New Japan G1 Climax approaches, as we'll have Dynamite ratings by then, who knows what else, an NBA TV deal maybe.
Will Brandon Thurston be joining the Post Wrestling G1 Climax contest?
Didn't I win it last year?
I think you did. You did. You made this enormous comeback. It was like New Japan booking. You started off slow and then you just, shot to the top of the ranking. So you have a title to defend.
Yeah. Is the form available yet? When's that available?
Postwrestling.com/G1. It is open now, free for everybody to enter and submit their picks. It's open until July the 18th at midnight Eastern time. So you have a week to make all of your picks and submit. You can go one-on-one with Brandon Thurston in the G1 Climax contest. But again, postwrestling.com/G1, and it's free to enter.
What was the prize? What do you win?
Brandon, for you, we are going to go top tier. We are going to get you a Post Wrestling button up dress shirt.
You get to co-host a podcast with John Pollock every week. Is that what you win?
You know what? That's right. We're going to pick up the option on Pollock and Thurston. So maybe that will be up for grabs in this year's G1. But that's going to wrap things up. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. All of you who showed up at Wide Open, want to thank listeners all out there, and for everyone that shared your feedback from Saturday. Good, bad, and different. We appreciate all of you equally. So that's it. We're going to wrap things up, and we will be back next week. But of course, everybody, when you're feeling down, just remember.
Appreciate the courage.